If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 132, Storks. Rotopack, form a podcast. Welcome, welcome, animation fans from around the globe. My name is Mason, and this is the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. This is episode 132, and today we are reviewing the brand new animated film that's in theaters by Warner Brothers Animation, Storks, or Estorks, if you're in Latin America. Like I said, I'm your host, Mason, and I am here with my two lovely co-hosts, Morgan, best heard, not seen, Stradling, and Chelsea, not in the jungle, Robson. Well, seriously, Morgan, turn on your camera so that we can see your beautiful face.
So this is me right now, and my camera is on. It's just blackness. So, yes.
She's hiding from
it.
Us.
She's,
that is what she's doing.
She is currently redacted from view. Well, we are coming to you live, and if you are listening or you're watching us for the first time, then welcome. If you are a recurring listener / watcher, then welcome back. We love you guys. And we also want to, I just want to thank our Patreon subscribers, because without them, we wouldn't even be able to do this video cast or do these live shows. And we really appreciate your support. So thank you very much. So the Animation Addicts Podcast. So think of us as your three super nerdy animation loving friends. And we're all sitting around talking about what we love about animation and about animated films in general, not just our favorites. See, we challenge ourselves. Although we didn't go out and see the new Ice Age movie. That was too much of a challenge. You know what? We didn't get complaints about that. We got praise. Yeah. We actually got praise from a production crew member of Ice Age 5 Collision Course. Oh, we gotta post that sometimes.
No, it's probably
he was like, I don't blame y'all. No, it was cool. He gave us a bunch of like reasons for why the executives wanted it done and how everyone in the production like groaned at the prospect of doing another Ice Age. So this is them coming straight off of the Peanuts movie, so I don't know.
Aww.
Nerdy stuff like that. That's what we talk about on
this
show.
That is what we talk about. And we love it, every second of it.
In the beginning, storks delivered babies. It wasn't always easy. No matter how tough or impossible or brutal or inhumane or savage, we would triumph over adversity. Thank goodness we don't do that anymore. Now storks deliver packages for cornerstore.com.
Our new phones!
Always deliver.
The orphan tulip.
Oh, a tulip is just fine. Orphan hurts my heart.
There's one less baby to deliver.
Aww. This is a family that never got the baby they asked for.
If this baby finds her family, then maybe I can find mine.
All right, let's do it.
Let me show you how to fly this.
Hello. I'm a bird. I'm pretty sure I know how to... Ah! I was wrong. I was immediately wrong.
Is your seat wet?
Yep, I peed in the seat when we were falling.
That baby's dangerous!
Wolves! Perfect!
My old nemesis.
Glass!
Birds can't see glass!
Oh no! Left! Right! Left!
Not working!
Are you kidding me?
Baby powder! Ah!
I built my plane to find my parents.
You'll find your family.
Don't worry, honey. Everything's gonna be just fine.
We're gonna die! Let's go!
Wolfpack, form of submarine!
What is happening?
Submarine!
What? I never
never seen that before. Nature shows.
No.
It just tastes like flowers.
Okay, stand aside. Are you in love?
I am in love.
Are you in love?
I'm in love too.
I agree.
Guys, we are headed so fast to our 150th episode.
Yes.
We're at episode 132, Estorks.
Estorks.
I went and saw it today. I'm totally fresh.
Me too. I saw it this,
Me too.
This afternoon at the 1 o'clock showing matinee at my local theater. So it was really funny when I walked in, the lady who was selling the tickets, like I live in this area that has a very high population of retired people. So
folks.
Wow.
Retired folk. And like the lady was just like the nicest person. She's like, oh, I bet you're really excited to see this little one. I'm like, yes, yes, I am. I am alone. That's nice. On a matinee for Storks. This is where I am.
So I saw it. I also saw it this afternoon. I think it's safe to say that we're all super busy and lazy, and we didn't go to bother to see the film until today. But we're going to try for the semi-unscripted approach, because I didn't write anything in our episode document that we use as like our outline for the episode. So
minimal notes here.
Minimal notes.
I don't know, but hey, I made quite a few notes. So
Chelsea made quite a few notes, so we'll be... you know, we'll be relying on her tonight. Now, if you're expecting my usual cynical theater report, then you'll be slightly disappointed, because I actually had a change of heart today.
The NBA playoffs are back. And on FanDuel, new customers can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Back in the day, news like this, your crew would have been writing each other letters.
Dearest Benjamin, wonderful news from the East. The spread has been covered.
Or maybe you'd use your phone to actually call someone.
Man, you see that dunk? Man, I saw that dunk.
But these days, it's all about the group chat.
I love that high-fiving kitten emoji.
No matter how you tell them, let your crew know that all new FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Ooh, Morse code. Classic. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Really? I was one of about maybe 7 or 8 people in the theater. There was another couple about my age, a guy my age who was there alone, and a grandma and her two granddaughters who were seated right in front of me. It was a really small theater. I walked in. I was really grumpy because I've had a really tough week, or a really busy week, I guess, full of stress. And so I look at it and I'm like, oh, great. So they're just going to make commentaries. So and they did. One of the granddaughters stayed perfectly silent, like a good little girl. The other one, after every preview, and we had a lot of previews. We had Lego Batman preview. We had Monster Trucks preview, which actually looks pretty cool, and some other previews. And after every preview, she turned to her grandma and go, "That was crazy," really loud. And I was like, "You know what? You're okay, kid. You're okay." So I've had a change of heart. She wasn't annoying, and she didn't disrupt my theater experience, because she actually didn't talk during the actual film. But after every trailer, she was like, "That was crazy." And the grandma was like, "Oh, we're going to have to see that one." I was like, "Oh, this is too sweet. Who am I to bash on this?" So little girl and her grandma, you guys are okay. The silent one, you're just okay. Fine, too. Yeah, so my initial thoughts on the film is I really liked it. I figured I would like it. I was not even pleasantly surprised, because I wasn't surprised. I came in with the same expectations as I usually do, and I for an animated film, and I was pretty happy and pretty glad I watched it by the time I left.
Nice.
Yeah, my initial thoughts, actually, going into this film, I was not expecting really anything. I was not looking forward to this film. It was just like... That one, I have to see that one. Oh. So I really wasn't excited about this at all. But after the first few minutes, they kind of won me over. And I was like, you know what? This is actually really quite clever. There's a lot of funny little things in there. Then, and my overall enjoyment was good.
Yeah, I sort of had the same perception as Chelsea initially. Was not intrigued by the concept, was not intrigued by the trailers, and the idea that I had to go see the movie was like, But, you know, I heard actually, you know, I didn't, this came out a few weeks ago, but, and I didn't have the chance to see the screening because of different things. And so I finally saw it, and other people had seen it, and they actually had very positive reviews and said, no, it's actually quite good. So that eased my troubled nerves a little bit, and so it was good. So we shall talk about it.
Yeah, Warner Brothers Animation, I think it was called, Rat Pack, the little studio?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we got Nicholas Stoller as writer and the producer, or director, writer, and the producer, who I don't even know who he is, so I'm going to look at his IMDb right now. What do we got? Let's see, writer for Yes Man, writer for Neighbors, writer for The Muppets.
Yeah, so basically he was a lot on live-action script, so he's done a lot of those live-action funny man type movies, and including The Muppets and Muppets Most Wanted, and he's actually...
Comedies for the new millennium.
Yeah, basically. And he's also looks like he's going to be writing, or he's already written, Captain Underpants movie from DreamWorks, and that is said to come out.
He'll be directing, not writing. Oh yeah, writing, you're right.
Well, yeah, he's writing and directing.
Yeah.
No. According to this, it's just writing, not directing. There's a little, great little table matrix that you can see on Wikipedia, and he is just writing, so Chelsea was right.
I love matrices. All right, so writer of Captain Underpants. I want to know how they're going to handle the killer toilets.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here's the thing that I thought was interesting about Nicholas Stoller was that he was not only the director, co-director on this, but he also was the writer and the producer. Well, he was co-producer in it. But, like, so this was basically his baby. No pun intended.
Oh, yeah. Since the movie is Storks, we're going to have to ask Morgan about all these stork-related questions. So,
oh, yes. I will update you on everything you ever wanted to know. The other director was Doug Sweetland. And if you look at him, he... was an animator. He is a Pixar guy. He's a Pixarian, going all the way back to Toy Story. He animated basically majority of the films. He was directing animator at one point and was the director of Presto. And then recently, his most recent is directing Storks, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I mean, we all have different goals, but for me, if I were an animator, I would love to direct a film at one point in time. Maybe not all animators want that to be their goal, but I think that's pretty cool. He was able to achieve that.
Yeah, and from what I saw, the different jobs that they both took on, like Nicholas was always there for all the writing, not for the writing, and also for the storyboard treatments and for the recording. Something that I really liked about this was most of all the recordings of the main duo of Tulip and Junior were all done together at the same time. So that was cool.
Good.
But also he was in charge of, that's mostly what he was in charge of. And then Doug just went all for the animation side. And Nick actually really liked what he saw in Presto and the fact that it was so different. It was more cartoony than it was and it didn't look like Pixar. It didn't look like Illumination. It just had its own feel. And so that was one of the main reasons why Warner Brothers were very excited about bringing Doug on.
Dude, gotta have my Presto, man. And I see the resemblance. There's a lot of physical comedy involved, you know, plus it's Warner Brothers, you know. And, but yeah, I was excited going into this because I love cartoons. I love cartoons. And maybe it's because I went through like a whole 6 months of my first semester in grad school just doing anatomically correct photorealistic CG work. And so now that I have a little more freedom and a little more say in the projects that I do in my grad program, I've been doing a lot more like cartoon stuff. And so I was excited to see this. When I watch films like this, I look at the characters and I'm like, okay, how do they rig that? You know, like what kind of controls are making those eyes make those shapes? And a new term that I've kind of picked up from, I guess, the past couple of months, like studying the industry and sending in applications for interviews and internships and stuff, is shape-based. And that is the concept of making animation controls and producing animation that is based on the shape, like the abstract shape of a cartoon. So think Dracula in Hotel Transylvania and Hotel Transylvania 2. So when Genndy Tartakovsky arrived as the ultimate director of number one and the only director of number two, he would look at an animation thing and he would basically draw on the screen and draw the shape that the shape of the pose that he really wants Dracula to hit. Mm-hmm. And the animators or the technical directors for the character need to make tools that let them hit those poses, no matter how wacky or goofy or abstract they look. So whether they can get boxed up and turn into like a box shape or turn into a squiggly line, there's thousands of lines of code that are written to make that happen, I suppose, or tools that are written to do that.
There's a code for that.
and so I'm kind of a nerd in that I look at kind of the technical character aspects, and it's pretty interesting. You know, I love how Tulip, especially her eyes and her mouth, they look like they could be just drawn on there, and yet there's enough stretch in the lips and stuff to make all kinds of different shapes and stuff. And I don't know, I just like how cartoony and abstract everything looked. Very similar to Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which I really enjoyed as someone who gets into the technical aspects of CG characters. So yeah, overall I was very, very impressed with it, and I saw a lot of presto in it, now that you mention it.
There was a lot to see.
There was a lot to see.
So this movie has been out for about 2 weeks at the time of this recording. The release date was September 23rd, 2016 in the U.S. But I believe it was released in quite a few other places at the same time. So basically worldwide. I know that while I was in Brazil, it did come out there as well. I did not want to see the dubbed version, though. But so since its release, it has made about So the budget for this film was about $70 million, which is about average from what I saw. I was looking at some of the other movies, and Secret Life of Pets was $75 million. So it was like on par with what other companies are spending to make these types of films. And the box office domestic, as of yesterday, October 5th, we've got about $41 million. And then worldwide, we're about $82 million.
So it has made its budget.
Yay!
That is the goal, right? That is step one, is can we make our budget
back? It's not like you can sell a lot of...
Check that off the list.
It's not like you can sell a lot of toys about this, you know?
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Nope, no cute penguin toys in this movie. The penguins are really evil and horrible in this movie.
They really are.
But cute little stork
cute
toys.
Cute little baby toys.
I don't know. I don't really see. I haven't heard much buzz about this film, you know, from just general people on the street or out and about. So I think it's done relatively well, but it's not necessarily, you know, breaking boundaries and just like a smash hit.
Yeah.
But
it was solid, though. Very solid.
Solid.
Rated PG, solid. And do you guys know why? It's because the film contains a scene depicting a fight between the protagonists, and there are some evil penguins where a fork is used as a weapon. Hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband, because they're stabbing people with forks around here.
I saw that, and I was just like, well, yeah, there's probably a good reason why you should talk to your, you know, little two-year-old. No, forks should not be thrown at your little sister.
Oh, no. If there are kids that are that creative with forks, then they should be president of the United States. But yeah, let them fling those forks. It's creativity. Oh, there's this line where it's like, I know your school promotes creativity over actual learning, but I was like, zing, I like it. Ty Burrell with the zinger. There's a lot of good voices.
Yeah.
First of all, we got Andy Samberg, who is my spirit animal. And seriously, watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I'm like a slightly more cynical, more sarcastic Jake Peralta from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And let's see. And then I didn't recognize Tulip's voice actress.
I didn't notice. Like,
She does a lot of voices for, really, like, she does stuff in Clarence, Adventure Time. She was in Bob's Burgers in a couple of episodes.
You mean we hired
Katie Crown?
Just kind of a B or C or D list person to do one of our leads.
Yeah, let's see.
In 2016,
yeah, she does a lot of. I don't watch Clarence, so I'm sorry, but on Cartoon Network, I think, but she's in it. She's she was in Barbie Life in the Dream House. It was a short TV series. She was Teresa.
Yeah.
She was an American Dad. So I think she just does a lot of voice acting for animation. And that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, awesome.
Because you know what? Man, she really flowed with Andy Samberg. Like, she really kept up with him.
Yeah.
And she really matched his personality and was a good fit, I think.
I thought so, too. And the fact afterward, when I heard that they had done most... He said that it was very rare, if not only like once or twice, did they ever do any lines with them alone. So they were always in the room together if they ever had any lines to do. So I thought that was probably one of the things that made it so cohesive throughout the whole thing.
Yep. And then Kelsey, call me if you need a corrupt businessman in your movie Grammar. again with the evil businessman. Like, do you guys see what Hollywood is trying
True.
To push down your throats? Like, seriously, wake up. But Kelsey Grammer, he basically played the same guy in Transformers Age of Extinction. And so they brought him back to be the same thing, except a stork. And I really liked how he was like, you get to do this. Stare at the sun? Yes. If you can't stare at it, then what's the point of being boss? Or something like that. I really liked it.
It's like, why did I make my office entirely out of glass when birds can't see glass?
Power move. I was like, I like that, actually. And then Key and Peele, the most creative and hilarious depiction of wolves in an animated film that I've seen
that
in a long
great.
Time. Wolfpack!
Yes.
Form a submarine! Wolfpack, form a plane! It's great.
Form a broken heart.
Form a minivan. Wait, we're parents now. This is dangerous.
Ow.
Pew, pew,
that was good.
The wolf packs are great. And you know what? I could barely notice that they were Key and Peele. And I love A.A. Ron. I love those guys. And it didn't even sound like them. They really ramped up the wolf, you know? So they were getting creative. It's like, this film, it's got this awesome mix of stars because they're stars, lesser known stars that are probably famous in animation, like a voice actor, like the voice of Tulip, you know, Kelsey Grammer, who's kind of a typecast. And then you've got Key and Peele, except instead of just Key and Peele cast as Key and Peele, they actually formed their own sort of wolf personas, kind of like what Tom Selleck was going to do with All Dogs Go to Heaven, but Don Bluth shut him down real quick. So I really liked them. And then Danny Trejo cameo, I mean, hello. And he was the kind of the old crazy stork that was Tulip's deliverer. Jasper, that's right. My baby.
Well, don't...
My bitch.
Don't forget Jennifer Aniston. That was the one voice to me that stood out.
Really?
I was like, oh, then that's
I must,
mom.
My Jennifer Aniston game is weak then, but my Ty Burrell game is strong.
No, my...
See, it's funny the different things you pick up on.
Yeah, my Jennifer Aniston game was really down. I was like, wait, what? I was not paying attention to that, but there we go.
Yeah, yeah. So I really like the cast. I love Andy Samberg. Like, this is Warner Brothers Animation, so these are the people that brought you the Lego movie, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And just that type of comedy and, like, the type of dialogue and commentary and, like, comments by the actors. Like, we millennials, we're so into our comments. Like, we have to comment on everything. Like, we have to be like, oh, that escalated quickly. We have to make, like, little quippy comments about that rather than talking about real issues. The election's getting way too close for me to keep my sanity. But... But we love our comments and our like little quippy one-liners, and like the rising generation today we have our own language, and that's totally reflected. And while I was watching this, I was like, man, is that how we talk? Like, is this like modern comedy for us? But and then I was like, man, I wish they would make animated films where they were timeless, where like the characters talked like anybody in any era could have talked. But of course, that's unrealistic. And I think it's important that, you know, 50 years from now, people are going to look back and be like, whoa, people talked that slowly, or, you know,
well,
people talked like
the...
that in real life and stuff. But I just admired the script writers or whoever was in charge of the dialogue, that it made it really relatable to this generation. And I thought that was pretty effective.
Yeah. Well, he said that some of it was actually on the spot, too.
Oh, so ad-libbed?
So there's a lot of ad-lib through this whole thing. And that's they kept a lot of that just because they wanted to make it more notable of today. It's just kind of his style too. Like, you look at all of his movies in live action, and it's going to have that same quip, that those same type of rhythm. Mm. So they have the same rhythm going through the whole thing, and so I think I really liked it in that because it did feel a lot more. Just it went faster, I think.
Yeah, very fast action. It's interesting how fast animated films move. And again, it's just, I think it's just this Warner Brothers animation style, you know, with the Ninjago Lego, short film before that, and the, hilarious preview for, Lego Batman before that.
Yes.
I think they've got their own flavor, you know, their own brand. And, I'm excited for that. And it's going to be interesting how it competes with who did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs? Was that Sony?
Yes.
Yeah, with Sony, you know, they had Hotel Transylvania, they had Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and then I don't think the type of frenetic energy that we saw in this film was quite like Illumination does. I think Illumination is a little less like rampant, but I'm really interested.
This kind of does have the same feel as what Sony is trying to go for, I feel.
Yeah. Well, good. They have a competitor. May the best studio win. I love competition in the industries.
I agree.
It's what drives perfection.
It's true.
But yeah.
Well, the funny thing is, as I was watching this movie, there were a couple, as always, a couple Simpsons quotes came to mind. And I'm just going to quote The Simpsons because I think every episode should have some type of a Simpsons quote. And there's one episode where Homer is making it so that Bart can't go see the new Itchy and Scratchy movie. And he says, you know, when I was a boy, I really wanted a catcher's mitt, but my dad wouldn't get it for me. So I held my breath and passed out on the coffee table. Or I held my breath and passed out until I banged my head on the coffee table. Doctor said I might have brain damage. Dad, what's the point of this story? I like stories.
I like stories. Yeah.
You did a good job of that.
You know, when I was a boy, I really wanted a catcher's mitt. I can only do Homer Simpson for like 2 seconds.
Oh, but you did a good
job. I'm working on my Homer and I'm working on my Peter Griffin, actually. Family Guy characters are pretty easy to do.
Please do Homer. That would make me so happy. But anyway, as I was listening, this quote kept going through my head because I was like, what is this movie trying to tell us? Like, what's the point of this at first? Because at first, you know, it comes in and you have the story of Junior. And, you know, obviously you get that great moment of like, hey, what do you guys got going on this weekend? Oh, well, I've got family stuff. Oh, yeah, family. Everyone's got their own little family and own life outside of work. And he's the main workaholic guy because he's got nothing else going for
him. That was very subtle. Yeah.
It was. And I appreciated the subtlety of it. But at the same time, I was like, okay. So we got that side of him. But then also, I was just like, are we trying to think of Junior and Tulip as a like an actual couple?
Like, no, it's just a they're a family. They formed their own emergency family. We're not a family. Yeah. We're just two people who made a baby and we're trying to get it to go to sleep or something like that.
Right. And I was like, It's like the only good thing that came out of this relationship is the baby. I was like, oh my gosh, this is funny.
It really reminded me of Cubone and the Two Strings, and how the banter between Monkey
Cubone
and
and
how the banter between Primeape and Heracross was very see, I go with the second Pokemon joke and no one gets it. But what are the things that they that give birth to the child? Very mother and fatherly. And jeez.
What?
And, sorry. Man, I am so frazzled this week.
That wouldn't have been my answer.
You'll know I walked
that,
into a pillar the other day.
I feel like I have a bit of an excuse as well, but yeah, continue. Man, we're gonna have a great episode.
It's been one of those weeks, guys. But yeah, mother and fatherly, and I liked that kind of stuff. And it had some very very updated concepts on what a family is, and I was happy to see. I was interested and happy to see a lot of different, different formats of what it means to be a family or have a family depicted in the film. Especially towards the end, I think it was kind of a shout out to any couple who has adopted or any couple who is raising a child, and it was very interesting. And
one thing that I didn't necessarily love, I mean, I feel the double working parents who are so busy that they basically ignore their children. I feel like it's just been done quite a few too many times recently with The Little Prince. And then what movie is it like from the 90s where, the girl is just at home and she never sees her parents. And
her parents just notice when they go and join the circus.
A problem, but I don't know. I felt that didn't feel very unique
Bit of redemption for the parents because they learned their lesson fairly early, you know, because the dad was, you know, just 5 minutes and then we're done, and then, you know,
this is the best day of my life,
and
more or less
I really liked that because there's a lot going on in the movie and it would just be like white noise or unnecessary to make them learn this giant valuable lesson there at the end, you know.
Well, it also helped to kind of create the vibe of they're both now looking forward to having this baby.
They all want the baby, so that ramps up. Right. Yeah, you're right. So classic writing, you've got to put more at stake, you know, and you've got to keep the audience wondering.
If they hadn't done that until the end,
ladies and gentlemen,
what are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Like, the fact that the baby wouldn't be there would have been like, well, we didn't really have our hearts set on it anyway.
You're totally right, though. It's a trope for the parents to be workaholics and ignore their
Yeah,
kid.
No, it is.
Yes.
I did see that there was quite a bit of, like, a pro-adoption theme when it came to the very end. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated that. And, like, even toward the beginning, there was a quote that I can't quote it. I looked for it and I can't find it online yet. But the quote basically is there are a lot of ways that babies come.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that a lot too, because there's just, you know, as a family goes in that way, like that is so very true. So I really appreciated that. But, you know, there was just a lot of things that I liked. When I was listening to some interviews from Nicholas, he was talking about the reason why this movie came to be was that he and his wife, their first child, came very easily and they didn't have to like go through any, third party But then the second child, they actually had to do like in vitro and had to do a lot of different processes to be able to have a second child. And so that came by, I guess that idea of there's a lot of ways that babies come is where it kind of stemmed from. So I was glad to see that. And it was a very undertoned, underlying message for kids that, you know, even if your brother and or sister doesn't come the normal way, you're still preparing for it. You're still like, building ramps and slides to be able to, for expecting this to come. So I liked it.
Yep.
I was still really, really confused about the whole Tulip and Junior thing. And the other Simpsons quote that always came in was, Birdman, you cannot marry Tulip. You're from two different worlds.
I like it. Well, there's always the orphan in animated films. You know, I never knew my parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's always the outcast, the one that doesn't fit in. You know, and a lot of animated films are driven by getting rid of the outcast, and it backfires, and they realize that the outcast is the best person ever, you know. And, but yeah, mm-hmm. I thought the story was really cute. You know what almost ruined my experience for me?
Tell us.
Back me up if you agree, is the freaking pigeon.
The homing pigeon?
Like, the homing pigeon.
Like, I didn't like him.
Maybe I'm just old and I don't understand the slang of the youngsters, but I couldn't understand anything. I couldn't understand a dang thing the guy was saying. Who did the voice? Who is this guy?
Bruh.
Stephen Kramer Glickman. So he does stuff like, he has his own. He had one episode of his own late night TV show.
It's more than I've done.
That's a bad sign.
It's more than I've done.
He was in a movie called 30 Nights of Paranormal Activity with the Devil Inside the Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. And it's probably a scary movie knockoff. He was also in a direct-to-video movie called The 41-Year-Old Virgin Who Knocked Up Sarah Marshall and Felt Super Bad About It. Get it? Anyway, I don't really know the guy that much. He's in Big Time Rush. But I did not like that pigeon. The pigeon was annoying. Why does he have hair? Why is he annoying? Why is he there? Like, and I couldn't understand anything he was saying. And his dumb the heavy did that song. How you like me now? I love that song, and he ruined it. No, I have that album. The album's great. The house that Dirt built, and I really didn't like his little sing-along. I did not feel like singing along with him because I did not like him. So I think the homing pigeon is a perfect example of an animation studio trying to create an annoying character that ends up not being appealing. The only annoying characters that work are appealing ones. Olaf is annoying, but he's appealing. Sid the Sloth is annoying, but appealing. You know? And but anyway, I just think Olaf's plain annoying, but he was successful. I do not like the pigeon. I hope I never see his dumb face again. Sorry to whatever character designer working at Warner Brothers is like, well, geez. right now, if you're actually listening to us. But that was a highly ineffective character because he didn't connect with me. I don't know anyone who, like, I don't know.
So the note to other animators, character designers, your characters must
please me.
Appeal to yes. Mason. To Mason. And it doesn't matter about broad audience or general. If it's not appealing to Mason, forget about it.
I'm the only one that matters.
Fail. Ultimate fail.
Ultimate fail.
Pigeon Toady. Not Pigeon a fan. Toady.
I don't even like
him. Do you know who I... One of the funniest moments, I think, were at the very beginning, right when Junior's talking to Tulip. He's like, hey, Orphan Tulip, please don't call me Orphan. That hurts my heart.
Yeah.
And then the birds that she was like, those are not birds. They do not fly. They're chicken, an emu, and something else. And the guy, the chicken's like, she's making our dreams come true. I was like, I love it.
So how did you feel about Tulip? I mean, because I didn't really connect with her.
Yeah, I didn't have a... There wasn't... I didn't connect with her either. You're definitely more trying to connect to Junior through the whole script. They don't show any of her, because like they could have shown a lot more of like her struggle and the fact that I've been alone living with birds for the past 18 years of my life.
Not normal.
No. And, you know, the fact that nobody ever talks to me, and especially this Junior guy that, oh, the first person to ever wish me happy birthday. Like, aww. It was just like there was just a lot of things. It's like you could have gone a lot more sad on that. And I'm kind of glad maybe that they didn't.
Yeah, all the situations around her were incredibly sad, and like she's basically been neglected and abused and like shoved in the corner. But like she didn't really process it that way. Like she did have that like quirky, you know, kind of sarcastic, like, oh, that hurts my heart, you know, but it didn't seem to really affect her in the way that maybe it should.
Right.
Not saying bad times should get you down, but she had a very great outlook on it.
Right.
But I just felt that she just was kind of, you know, superficial in her character and kind of goofy, and I couldn't really take her seriously, and I didn't
Yeah,
really
there was very little deepness besides the fact that the one moment where she's like, yeah, I still have the last piece of the beacon that dropped when Jasper dropped my beacon. And I've been looking for my family, and that's like it. And then there's kind of like, she's pretty, she's kind of deep. Like, I think it's interesting. Oh, I thought it was hilarious how the baby was crying and he was like, just ignore it. Maybe it'll be quiet. And then it goes into her mind and she's tapping into eons and millennia of motherly instinct. And there's like a Spartan woman like defending her baby. There's like a caveman woman defending her baby.
Oh yeah.
And I really thought that was really funny.
That was funny.
They had some really good truths about parenthood in the film that I'm glad that they tapped into for comedy purposes. But yeah, you're right. She is kind of superficial. Like, she's very silly. She talks to herself and makes up these elaborate scenarios with like multiples of herself. She's like, it's okay, I covered for myself. Okay. And so yeah, but I liked her just because she's really cute, and she was a hyperactive character without being annoying to me. Again, the only thing that matters is appealing to me. And I liked her hair, and the character, like, all in all was okay. Cool.
I like that she comes from a family of Weasleys. That was also cool.
Oh, that's right. All the Weasley clan. I thought that she was going to ditch her family for good. Like, I thought that we were going to end the movie with her never having knocked on that door and met her and meeting her folks. But they did at the very end.
Yeah. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Like, I'm sure the filmmakers are like, okay, you know, we are missing that closure. We need that closure, especially for the kids, possibly, who are watching this. I don't know. I think there's two ways of looking at it, because there's some adopted children who never go looking for their, you know, birth parents, or who never felt the need. And then there's some that really do. So there's both sides. I don't know.
Yeah.
They could have gone either way, and it made it work.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So what were your favorite parts of the film? What was like the scenes that really stood out to you? Oh, dude, I was laughing so hard with the penguins.
Mason,
when the
go.
Penguins and them are fighting and they have to be quiet. So it's this really awkward, like, it's really, really quiet, and they keep looking at the baby and making sure that it's asleep, you know? And then just like the fact that there was no there's no like action music, you know, and there were no gigantic sound effects. It was just this, like, basically if you took every Hollywood action sequence and took out the music and like the Foley sound, it's just people going
right.
Everybody was silent in the theater, but I was like, I was cracking up the whole time, because it was like the funniest, most creative way to portray a fight sequence that I've seen in a long time. I really enjoyed that part. And the fact that the penguins were not adorable, the penguins were horrible and had chin stubble. And they were nasty, and their eyes were just beady little white nastiness.
I love that quote. It's like, what? Like, the penguins will take care of. They've got lots of documentaries about how motherly
about
them
how they
and
how well they raise their
how
young.
Great parents they are.
I liked that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, there are a lot of those fun little quips. Yeah, the wolves, they were great. There were a lot of great moments with the wolves. They're building a suspension bridge. How is that possible? I don't know. Don't question it.
I loved it. Yeah, I really loved those dang wolves. I thought it was really interesting how... Oh, this is an animated film where the villain dies, right? He gets in the giant robot.
Did he die?
And the tiny little bird, the little angry birds that he's always picking on, decide to pick back. You know, because revenge is good, apparently. He falls to his demise. So we've got a falling death in animation. So that's good.
I feel like we don't get that very much anymore.
We don't.
It was a 90s really thing, and now it's like, oh, we
they're
can't
either
kill
go
them
to jail so they can keep them for the sequel if they want. Or they, yeah, I don't know. We don't have a lot of deaths.
And you know what? It's all the worse for it. Bring on the deaths. No. That's...
Mark my words, there'll be killings next.
That whole ending sequence... That whole ending sequence where the whole... warehouse falls. I'm just thinking, I always think about the mess that will happen after something is destroyed, and then who is going to clean that up? That's something that for whatever reason always goes through my head. I remember one time Morgan and I were watching a movie, and it was like there was a huge fight sequence where they go into the store and they like break everything down, and we both look at each other, we're just like, who's gonna clean that up? That poor shop owner will come into work that day and be like, oh.
Oh, man, that stinks.
So that's something that always goes through my head.
Wow.
I like how at the very beginning, did you guys think of Amazon when you...
Yes, that's most definitely. Like...
Amazon?
Amazon.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, it totally was like a knockoff, ripoff of Amazon.
Yeah.
I mean, instead of things being delivered by drones in this world, it's just... hasn't quite progressed to that. It's storks.
I like the right. Yeah, I like the clever way that they got back to the storks factory. Was she just ordered a refrigerator and then they returned it. It's great. That's a very nice little commentary on like how instantaneously we get things now.
Oh, I understand what you just did. You ordered that so in return it so that we could get back here. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Classic Andy Samberg. But yeah, overall, like, I was very impressed with the film. I felt like they could have left the stupid pigeon out. and actually everything would have been fine. Like, I don't know what if the movie would have been ruined if they had just cut him out entirely.
Yeah.
Well, there was a whole section that I felt like it did slow down. The fact that they had to like take him to another place and change the address on the homing beacon and everything. I felt like that it got a little jumbled there, and it didn't like the. I felt like the pace kind of stalled slightly. That was for me at least. I don't know. I felt like it was going really well. And then right around there, it was just kind of like, what's going on? And then it kind of picked up after that. So that's where
it's interesting. They always have to have that kind of journey montage where they're starting to bond a little more. Relationships start to get fixed so that they can be truly tested by the end of the film. Yeah. I felt like it might have slowed down a little bit, like pacing wise around that part. But I liked kind of that fatherly side of Junior. If he's Junior, then who is Senior? Maybe that'll be in Storks,
too. I
think
the boss.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking familial.
Oh, Storks, too.
In Storks, too, they're going to be like, but what about my family? You know?
I don't think we need a Storks, too. Let's just...
Yeah,
I don't think it will have been such a huge success to warrant one. And then it's just no. We told the story; it was good. Let's move on.
Okay. Okay.
Well, do you know what? Something that now that you say that specifically, like what happened, who is going to be Junior's who was the senior, you realize in the very beginning when Hunter is like, you will be the boss, and everybody
I could have done
explodes.
Without that.
It's like, oh, the power. I thought the first time it was funny, but it was after that he was like, oh yes, and I'll be like the father you never knew and blah, blah, blah. So I realize now, like, he was basically an orphan as well.
Oh, see, they're just setting up for the sequel, y'all.
They're just setting it up. And so now that's one more reason why he should have more of a kinship with Tulip than not. Except he is very different in how he shows his feelings. And at the very end, he's the one that cries more.
Oh, he really has a heart. And then I like that little moment he has what is the name that Tulip gives her? Diamond Destiny?
Yes.
He gives away Diamond Destiny. Sign here and here and initial here, here and here. He kind of has a premonition of her potential and the life that she's going to have. And that's really sweet. And he says, I love you. He tells the baby loves.
Aww. Did you guys get emotional at all?
I did at the end.
I got emotional at that part. Yeah, no, I really got emotional at that part.
Family. Isn't it about time?
It's all about family.
It is.
It's all in the family and about family. But yeah, I'm happy for any pro family message, whatever your family is made up of. And I really enjoyed it. I thought the ending wrapped up really well, and she got to meet her family. And I'm really glad that Jasper wasn't like, I like a character that,
a creeper.
Yeah, I like a character that everybody thinks is a creeper, but he's really just misunderstood, and he actually helps out a lot. But I think there was a point.
That,
what? Like the old man in Home Alone.
Yes, true. That is true.
Isn't he one of the better characters in the film? Isn't he the one everybody cheers for at the end?
Yes.
But anyway.
Yes, it is. But just that
funny way to phrase it.
I like characters where everybody thinks they're a creeper, but then they're...
He's just misunderstood.
It's just misunderstood. What?
Oh. Fantastic.
But anyway, I really enjoyed this film, and I want to know what you guys would rate it, actually.
All right, so for me, I give it 3 stars.
Hello.
I felt like it was enjoyable, funny, and something I could watch again. It's not something that I would necessarily want to watch again, however. Like, or at least I would be like, I want to watch that, you know? It's the difference between I am willing and it is my will.
I am willing and it is my will.
Yeah, so there's the willing passive. Okay, yeah, I'm down with that. Or the willing, or it's my will, meaning I will actively search that out to watch it again. I'm willing. It wouldn't be my will. So that's where I held
movie
at 3 stars. So
I am right along with you. I went in this not really expecting much, not wanting to see it at all, and was surprised. However, I don't think that it really, I mean, other than the family theme, which Mason talked about, that was kind of the highlight, definitely, but there wasn't really too much that made me love this movie where I need to see it again. So I'm going to give it 2.5 stars.
Whoa.
Not saying that that is bad. It's just, no. I don't need to see it again. Wasn't my favorite, but I mean, I was surprised and it held my attention while I was watching it.
Man, now I feel like a loser if I rate it 4 stars, because that's kind of where I'm
headed. No, rate it what you want to rate it.
I don't know. This was one of my... How many animated films have I seen all year? I don't know. I've seen like 2. How much should I rate Cubone?
Oh, I can't remember our ratings.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I can't.
Somebody needs to do like a whole spreadsheet of all of our ratings for every movie that we've ever done.
And how ridiculous and inconsistent and subjective they are.
Yes. Yes. Hey, we don't claim
you rated
to
Goofy
be...
movie the same as Gone with the Wind? That one guy. Oh, man.
Hey, our
see, we can laugh about that era now, but man, that was rough.
That's the great thing about this. It's like, these are our opinions. You have your opinions. Ours are totally subjective and biased. That's the great thing.
Yeah, we don't pretend to be anything.
Start your own podcast.
Yeah. And when you do, don't dedicate 2 entire episodes about bashing us. But anyway, if you would please. But I don't know. 4 stars. I'm going to give it 4 stars. You know why? Because I really enjoyed the animation. I love Andy Samberg, and I thought it had a great message, and the visuals were amazing. Like, man, we are pushing a lot as far as rendering and comp work and lighting and, you know, and surfacing and things like that. And just the fidelity at which you can produce an animated film now is
There was one moment.
Amazing.
Sorry to cut you off. No, but there was one moment where he like drops the piece of paper with like his picture of him as the big brother with the little brother on the ground with all the rain falling over it. And it's like, wow, that is really well done. Just the imagery and the quality of animation.
Oh no, man! The lighting
really
when
great.
The lighting when the factory is on the tip of that that mountain and it's falling down and the sun is hitting it just right. It's just, man, it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful when it's falling down to the Mwah. Doom.
C'est magnifique. But But yeah, super happy about it, and I'm glad I went. Would I watch it again? I don't know. I'm kind of at this weird point in my life when I want to watch one, like, films once often, then the same film over again often. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, if I'm going to be in this industry, then I really need to know about movies and stuff. And there are some non-negotiables that classics that you need to watch if you're going to know what's going on in the industry. And I need to catch up on those. And so, I don't know. Replay value is kind of irrelevant to me. I haven't even watched like The Lion King in a while.
So I thought it was interesting. This was done by Warner Animation Group, and this is sort of the new and improved, you know, group. There's been lots of iterations of Warner Feature Animation over the years. We have the 90s era with Space Jam, Quest to Camelot, The Iron Giant, and so on and so forth. But they kind of regrouped, and their first film was The Lego Movie, and this was their second, which is Storks. And I think for, you know, like, looking at this new era, they've been pretty good. Obviously, you have The Lego Movie on the one hand, which is crazy successful and popular and yeah. just all around great. And then this, I would just say decent. And then if you look at their list of upcoming films, you have the Lego Batman movie, the Lego Ninjago movie. Then you do have Smallfoot-esque Scoob, S-C-O-O-B, and then the Lego movie sequel and the Billion Brick Race. So they definitely have a lot of their bricks in the Lego basket. But as far as this as being a unique, you know, animated film non-sequel, I thought it was pretty good for, you know, just decent. A 2.5-star decent, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're 3.
Which I feel like I have given movies at 3.5 stars, like, way more cutting reviews. But that's what you get.
Morgan doesn't care anymore, is what she's saying.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. That's the great thing. So
I love things that don't mean anything. I'm an absurdist. I love absurd humor. Like, at work, all we do is look up YouTube poops. Do you know what those... You know what those are, right? They're like funny, slightly inappropriate edits of children's shows like SpongeBob. I'll send you some links. I'm just kidding. Oh, no, man. I love absurdity. Stuff that doesn't make sense. Yeah.
Well,
so,
speaking of things that are not absurd, let's move into our voicemail segment.
Okay. Speaking Woo-hoo! Of absurd, we had a whopping 4 voicemails. That was a red herring. There's nothing absurd about it. But we have voicemails by Rachel Wagner, Ryan R., and someone with no name, and we're going to play the no-name review first.
Hi, Rotoscopers. I just saw Storks, and I thought it was pretty good. My favorite things about the film were probably how cute it was and the character design. I loved all these characters. I feel like this is the first like 2D, 3D film that really, I think, captures like how like a 2D film would look like. I felt like these characters, the animation, and it made these characters feel so like alive, not like very different from like Pixar or Disney's like designs. And I love how cute this film was. I was surprised. I got kind of emotional. I didn't cry, but I did get emotional at some points. And I think basically this film was like, the cuteness in this film was off the charts. And I also thought it was a fun film. Well, the one part I didn't get was I didn't see that the that, like, the corporation or what, like, the thing they use to, you know what? Okay, start.
I think he, I don't know, I think he just ended the call or he ran out of time or something like that.
Yeah, sometimes if you send it via SpeakPipe, there's a minute 30 restriction.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if that was what it was sent by, but there you go.
Well, I liked how he said that it was, this animation was very close to what it would be in 2D, and I can totally see that as well. Like, it was 3D, or it was computer driven, but I can see, like, when I think about it in my mind, it does look 2D to me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, basically we're trying to get to the point in producing animation where I want this animation to look like the way I envisioned it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have someone who works with cartoons and more abstract imagery, then by gosh, we have the technology to pull that off. This next one is by our very own Rachel Wagner on Storks. Here we go.
Ah, Miss Rachel.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Rachel. So I saw Storks and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a cute little movie. I thought the message was really nice. One thing I really liked was the way that the parents kind of learned their lesson very early. And so you didn't get the typical kind of overworked workaholic parents, like at the last minute running off and spending time with their kids, like in Hook or something like that. They just realized that their kids were really fun. And I thought that was really refreshing. And I also thought that a lot of the humor worked. I liked the wolves in their different formations, but I also thought that some of the humor didn't work, like the toady pigeon, a little of him I thought went a long way. So anyway, that's my thoughts. I'd be curious to know what you think about it and if it worked for you. I think it feels a little bit forgettable, even though I did enjoy it.
Yeah, I think Rachel's like right along with me. Like it was good. It was enjoyable, but hey, let's move on. One thing I definitely noticed about Rachel's voicemail, is that great sound quality.
Oh,
you can tell.
My goodness.
That she has a YouTube channel because that was
she cares.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes. So, yeah, she did talk about something we didn't, which was that the parents learned their lesson earlier on in the film. It's not just like, yay, here's a whole bunch of morals and lessons all wrapped up in a bow at the end. You know, they learn in the middle, and then it prepares them for the baby that comes, you know, which is good. You know, because you could imagine that they, you know, didn't accept that they were going to have a baby until the very, very end. And it's like, oh, well, you're here. I guess we love you.
Nice. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I totally stole that point from Rachel. I listened to her voicemail ahead of time, but yeah.
Ladrón.
Ladrón. But yeah, let's see. This last one is from Ryan R.
Who is in our chat right now. So, Ryan.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. This is Ryan, one of your subscribers from the Rotoscopers channel. I love you guys so much. Anyway, since I'm recording this message a week before the new Storks movie comes out, which is a Warner Brothers movie, here's my question that relates to that, of an upcoming Warner Brothers animated movie. What are your thoughts on the Lego Batman movie so far? It's honestly one of my most anticipated movies of next year and my most anticipated animated movie of next year. Because the Lego movie is one of my favorite anime movies ever made, and from the creativity to the characters to all the hilarious jokes, heartwarming message and story, it's one of the few movies I consider to be perfect, and I loved it from beginning to end because it never became dull. And I honestly think the Lego Batman movie has a lot to live up to, but I think from the trailers alone, it looks like it's going to deliver one of the most hilarious, creative, and full of heart movies that involve my favorite DC characters that I grew up loving. And all the trailers alone, every time I rewatch them, they get better and better, and I laugh harder every single time because it's just so memorable, and I just can't wait. Anyway, that's my question to you guys. Anyway, this is Ryan. I love you all, and I hope you get this message right around the time the Storks gets released. All right, love you all. Bye.
Thanks, Ryan.
Oh, we love you too,
Thank
Ryan.
Thank you. So as far as my thoughts about the new Batman movie, or Lego Batman movie, I was really, the preview that I saw before Storks was really great. I made me really excited about it. I feel like when I watch it, it'll be the same way that I loved the Lego movie, in that you're just watching and laughing the whole time. I think one thing that I really like about the whole Lego franchise is inherently it has the ability to cross genres.
Ooh.
And it does not have to stick in canon. So that's something that I really like about that, because you go in knowing that it does not matter and it is totally crazy, but it's going to be funny. So my thoughts.
Yes.
Your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think so far, I mean, obviously Batman in the Lego movie franchise was a huge hit. People loved him. He was obviously one of the highlights of the film. And there were worries that perhaps they couldn't replicate this. But so far with the trailers, I'm liking what I'm seeing. And I do think it'll be interesting just to focus on him and get a cool little, you know, Batman story out of it.
Yay. All right, that's it for voicemail. So thanks, everybody, for calling in. If you want to leave your own voicemail and be featured on the show, you can go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can call 406-646-6575. That's 406-646-6575.
So our next episode is actually going to be Wall-E.
And get hyped, because this will be the first time I've ever watched it.
Whoa, get ready.
Yeah.
So, yes, that is going to be a patron pick, and it's going to be followed by another patron pick, which is Finding Nemo. So back-to-back Pixar films, speaking of Mr. Doug Sweetland. And then we will be going into new releases. Then in November, we will be doing Trolls and then
yes.
Moana. So that's basically the next couple films we'll be doing on the show. You can go to rotoscopers.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom. There's a little thing in the footer that says upcoming podcast episodes, and you can check out the schedule there. As we get closer, I will update those with links so you can rent the movies online. Obviously, Trolls and Moana, not possible to do that. We recommend that you go to your local theater and support the films there.
Yep, yep. Man, I'm so excited for Trolls and for Moana.
Yes.
Seriously. I actually don't know which one I'm going to like more, to be honest, but that's okay. I can like both of them equally. So yeah, I'm excited.
Me too.
For sure.
All right, guys. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to everyone who joined us in the chat. We had Jeremiah, we had Ryan, we had Rachel, we had a whole bunch of people basically that were joining us live. So Raymond was joining us and a few other people up a little earlier. So thanks for joining us. We record, go to the bottom of the website for our recording schedule. It gives the date on which we record, and it's usually 5 p.m. Pacific's time, 7 p.m. Central. So until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
We are the Rotoscopers.
I didn't even say it. I'm so sorry. We are the Rotoscopers.
Fail.
Ooh, I should, Chelsea, I should show you my latest time-based media project. We had to do audio engineering for a scene, and I think you'd be pretty proud of me.
Really?
Yeah,
I
recorded zombie noises on my microphone for like a minute.
Oh,
I
saw that. That was on Monday, wasn't it?
I saw that too.
Oh, that's for this. We turned a scene from No Country for Old Men into a zombie movie, and we even green screened someone in, and it looks really good.
Nice.
Expect nothing less.
We're calling it No Country for Old Zombies.
Love it. I love how you turned your head to the side, like so proud of yourself after you did that.
I am proud of myself. Is there anything wrong with being proud of myself?
No, it's great.
It's all I've got.
It's fantastic.
Sir, she got away.
Sure, she got away.
A peculiar joke. That's what you...
We're going to Pixar Land. I can talk about that. I can talk about Trolls. I can talk about
Smile, everyone.